Self-healing class, Tuesday night at Breathe. So, take two. What's the most important aspect of what we're doing in this class?
View.
Hmm?
View.
Yeah, what does that mean? Who was here last week? Okay. The rest of you are off the hook, or you get a fresh chance. That was good. He didn't give it away for the people who weren't here last week. So, what's the most important aspect of what we're doing? We're doing self-healing, and so we're moving and breathing and beating ourselves and rubbing ourselves and doing all kind of strange things. But what's the root of it all? What's the foundation upon which everything we're doing sits? The view is a clue for those of you who weren't here last week. Getting in touch with ourselves in the moment, yeah. It sort of precludes that. It's sort of the force that even made it possible for you to show up here. Self-healing, breath, chi. Yeah, but you sort of heard about the class and it says self-healing, and so there's something there that, call it the invisible elephant that you're riding. Last week we talked about that idea. Awareness. Yeah, there's this possibility that there's a capacity in us to self-heal. Right? So there's something, at least a smidgen of it, that says, I think that's actually possible and it's interesting to me, and then you move toward it. Oh, there's some perception of some value that you might get from doing something like this. I would say that there's a lot more perception around what it is that might be possible with self-healing than we actually are consciously aware of. And so there's some kind of knowing, some kind of outlook, some kind of view that says, I think my body, mind, spirit has the capacity to heal itself. And last week what we talked about is that maybe that's this big underlying force. And then on top of that, there's all sorts of ideas about the body and the mind and how they function. And to what degree do we have the capacity to tap into some sort of self-healing modality or energy or capacity? And we talked last week about different views that sort of get in the way of or inhibit the full capacity of our self-healing. And one of those is to have a fixed idea of what your body-mind is, right? If you think your body-mind is a bag of chemical reactions, or you think your body-mind is a bag of bones and blood, then it's kind of fixed in space and time. And the self-healing can have an effect, but it will only have an effect to the degree to which your view allows it to operate. But when we look at the body-mind with a sense of curiosity and kind of openness, and we at least entertain the idea that maybe it's a changing field of energy consciousness, then all of a sudden the whole situation is quite malleable. And that little force that brought us into any kind of yogic practice, there's some kind of interest that we can't quite put our finger on. Often I ask people, why did you sign up for my teacher training program? You know, if I'm honest with myself, I don't really know. Good, that's a really honest answer. There's some sort of pull that we know there's this capacity, there's this interest, we might call it an appetite, to taste something inside of ourselves that we know is always there. And so it's more about getting out of the way, or if anything, sort of removing what inhibits the natural self-healing capacity that we have, and it's bubbling up. It's like we're standing on a spring, and how can we let that spring water come right up without blocking the flow of it? And so we talked a lot last week about how that is related to the way we see and the way that we don't necessarily recognize that we're seeing and then projecting. So we won't talk too much about that tonight, but I do want to tie that into and sort of use that as the springboard to go a little deeper into the stuff we've been working on. So when we boil all of that down, I mean, I'm hoping some of you actually took that and contemplated and think about it a little bit more. We'll touch on it again in months to come. But the basic premise is that, have you checked in with what you believe about your capacity to heal yourself. And I don't mean what you would admit in public. I mean what you wouldn't admit or haven't recognized yet that you think or believe. So if you haven't taken your own mind and beliefs as at least an object to play around with investigating, then you're sort of riding on the 1,000-pound elephant that you haven't admitted that you're riding on. And those are what we call last week the unchecked assumptions, the givens. So what often occurs is that there's a belief that we could enter into this self-healing state, a self-cultivation state, and we go with that, and we don't recognize that there's 20 other thoughts about how limited our capacity is. And check whether or not there's any validity to those thoughts might be more important than gaining a new understanding of the meridian system or some sort of other idea. And so a lot of the old texts talk about just lose the ideas that you already hold, and then the self-healing capacity is right at your fingertips, and you might not even understand why it's happening or how it's happening, but the fact that you know in your full heart and spirit that it is possible is the most important thing. Yeah, and to recognize when you're doubting that, or to recognize when you're sort of giving up your internal authority to someone else. I had a client this week. I see a lot of people at home practice and in my home clinic. This person came and their intuition said, I should not get the foot surgery. I should not, you know, do that. All the doctors said, you know, you really got to. You're never going to walk. And this person's young. Person did the surgery and it's been 6 months and like they're still in pain and it didn't really fix anything. Went to see a couple other specialists and they were, you know, you really didn't need to get the surgery. It's like there's always going to be someone with an opinion. The person through this whole journey understood that I could have healed the thing myself. Actually, there's so many methods to work with that particular problem that don't require surgery and aren't invasive and have really zero risk. And so the person connected with the capacity of the body to heal and sort of gained back their authority. And I've seen it happen 1,000 times where you go, how can I work with this thing in my body? And you try to gather information and you keep finding dead ends. You keep finding that the result you get isn't exactly what you want. And we talked a little bit last week about how there's two general scenarios. One is the scenario that other people can fix for you. And the other is the scenario that you have to learn by working with people or finding it in yourself, how to allow your body to heal itself. Right? And a lot of us find ourselves working with conditions and things that fall into this category. And it's so much more interesting. You end up learning so much about yourself and your assumptions and your relationship to reality by actually working with your own self-healing capacity. So it's a great teacher, and I consider it a great gift if you have a health condition that's sort of not going away. It's fantastic. It's like it's not going to stop talking to you until you pay attention and learn what it is that needs to happen. And so the first thing that needs to happen is that we need to go, do I really think that I'm capable of this? And to be really honest about maybe I don't think I'm capable of it. You wouldn't say that to your friends at the yoga studio because it's not cool to say that. I'm in touch with the universal energy and it's all happening, but you might actually be doubting. And so to really understand that that capacity is indigenous to us. It's, you don't even have to do anything to get it. It's full power all the time. How to stop distrusting that and how to stop contracting internally so that you squeeze the life force into this sort of, it's like taking the hose and going like that. Mental tension, emotional tension, self-doubt, self-critique. Sort of taking on the story that we got from medicine and religion. So, like, your spirit's incomplete unless you hook up with somebody who can hook you up with the big dude in the sky. Ridiculous. You don't know how to heal yourself, you have to call your doc. Ridiculous. I mean, if you shatter your femur, maybe a good idea to talk to one of those people. But most of us are doing relatively fine, but we have some sort of nagging thing. And so for that, we need to work with the mind first. We need to work with the heart first. And then what we do can be relatively simple. It doesn't have to be complex 500 yoga postures or an 800 movement Tai Chi form. It can be just one movement of the Tai Chi form within which you learn how to relax and breathe and connect with your heart, connect with your spirit, and lose the distrust of your own body and of nature. and everything happens by itself. Or basic seated position. Huh? So those things are so foundational and hard to point out. The mind wants to go, okay, well, tell me what to do. Right, tell me what to do. It's not really about what to do. It's about how to see and how to relate. And then everything you do becomes self-healing. Huh? So we want to bring that then into the simple techniques that we're using in here, the shaking. So then work with your mind. Wherever you let your mind go into your body, cultivate the attitude of curiosity and openness and confidence. Right? So if there's aching in your shoulder, don't lose trust in your body. Don't start kind of, it's easy to go to the attitude of kind of being frustrated with this darn body, like it's something you have to schlep around for your life. And that kind of attitude, I would call that distrust. So don't go to distrust. Go to, now I need to pay more attention. Now I need to listen a little bit more. And develop this kind of humility, this kind of curiosity with your body, instead of becoming sort of cynical or negative or judgmental or even like manipulative. Like, if you just go away, then I'll be happy. The body, you can't trick the body like that. You can't trick the mind like that either. So it's important. That's why the shaking practice is called the ritual of the heart, and why we first thing we do is go up on our tippy toes and almost fall over. Because if you're still taking yourself seriously at that point, then, I don't know, you maybe take off another layer of clothes or do something. Start making funny sounds. Like, we want to go to that place where the heart is kind of free and open and a little bit not serious, and then start jumping up and down. The whole point of that whole thing is to get the heart sort of rattled free of all of its worries and concerns and connect with something quite simple and quite potent, and then start to work. Then we go to the head and the eyes, and we start doing all of these things inside of our body to open up the energetic. And we do joint opening and beating ourselves and all of that. But the spirit of all of that, the view, the way of looking at all of that and relating to all of that, is probably 90% of the effect, 95 maybe. So you might get the same qigong from going on the merry-go-round for 20 minutes if you have the right view. Right? So I think it's important to sort of deregulate the exercises and not make them some sort of super esoteric thing that gives us access to something that otherwise isn't accessible. It's not like that at all. Yeah. But what's happening in your heart mind, that has the capacity to either connect you or sort of keep you at a distance. Yeah. So now, having said that, any particular conditions, any particular body parts, any particular aches or pains, can be mental, emotional, physical, that you want to throw out? Neck. Okay. So when we're shaking, I always talk about how the head and the chest are connected by the neck, right? The neck is like this connecting place. So blood, air has to get in through your nose, through your neck, into your lungs. Blood has to get from your heart to your head. And so neck, usually tension in the neck comes from trying to dominate the world with your head. So we're always saying in this class, drop the weight and the intensity and the effort from your head into your belly. So the image of that is like an empty head with the moon shining inside. And inside your belly, the sun. Inside your head, the moon. So as much as you can throughout your day, cool your head and let everything from the head, whatever effort, whatever thoughts, whatever concerns, let them drop down into your belly. And then the neck will start to relax. Usually the neck itself is not the problem. It's the eyes, the front lobe of the brain, it's all getting overworked. And that's not even the root of the problem. The root of the problem is using our will, using our eye, trying to do what nature is naturally doing is what causes neck and shoulder tension. And then a whole slew of problems result from that. Hand issues, wrist problems, elbow problems, migraines, eye problems, hearing problems, because all the nerves that pass through this area are getting squeezed and the vessels are getting squeezed. So we've got all kinds of things, even respiratory problems, even blood pressure. So if we can, we all need to do that. That's not just one person. We all need to work on that. Empty the head, fill the belly. Yeah. And also chilling out a little bit on the forward action of our sensory organs. So even when you're looking at the computer screen, try to, if you need to be closer to the screen, move it closer to you. Don't ever move your body. So I literally got slapped by my Chinese calligraphy teacher for, if you move yourself to make the paper fit better to your body, you get hit. You move the paper and then get your body in a place where you are comfortable and everything else needs to be in its place so you're in good alignment and not bending yourself because the chair or the table or the paper or the brush or something's not right. You have to not lose your alignment. And then same with pouring tea or any of the classical arts. You should never contort yourself. So the computer and the phone are the same way. If they own you, they own your chi. And so all your chi is just going out and your wrists get messed up and your eyes get messed up and your neck is hurting. And so you adjust everything to you, to your unique body position so that you can maintain neutral joints, neutral spine while you're working, while you're driving, while you're doing everything. So your car, your computer, your phone, try to always sort of don't let those things master your original posture, because then they own your chi. So that's a big thing. And also, don't let ambition own your chi. Sort of let your original nature express what it must, but don't let ambition push you into being something that you're not. That's the cause of chi exhaustion. So that's a lot to do with view. I can't tell you how to shake to not do that. You have to observe yourself and go, yeah, I'm pushing beyond what my actual original nature is. I'm trying to be more than what I am, or less than what I am, or left or right of what I am. That causes a lot of tension in the neck and the throat, digestive problems, insomnia, and exhaustion. Yeah? So we live in a place where ambition is like king, but it's not actually. True connection to your original nature is where self-healing is at and where fulfillment is at. And what comes from that will naturally come. However much money needs to be in the bank will be there. So all that is about neck and shoulder stuff. All the old texts all say, the old teachers would hit you right here and say, too much eye. Huh? Means you're too much involved in I'm doing it. I'm using my effort and I'm getting the result for me. That's wrong. That's not the practice. You put your effort here, then you don't own it. Nature's doing it. You don't think, I'm doing it. That's a mistake. Too much I. Yeah. So, and again, that's not one person's issue or 20 people's issue. We all need to incorporate that into our practice. I catch myself a million times making the mistake, whether I'm making tea in the morning or driving the car or working on the computer, we all fall. You know, we succumb to it because it's easy and it's all around you. Everybody else is doing it. So it's kind of cool to be like tense and anxious. It's like it's in vogue. So if there's any kind of discomfort, mental, emotional, physical, and you can't see sort of why, a couple common things happen. One from, are you doing yogic practices, qigong, cultivation kind of things? So it's really common that this student last week, it's like after 2 years of qigong, her heel started hurting again. And a couple weeks later, she's like, oh, I remember when I was really young, I broke my heel. And so sometimes pain that comes is actually your body healing itself, whether that's emotional or physiological, or it's an old injury, or it's a tendency in your bloodline to have a particular problem. You'll experience some kind of discomfort usually when there's a healing process going on. They say when the chi reaches the place, then you feel that the righteous chi is sort of pushing out the sick chi, and usually that feels a little painful. So that can be something. And I've experienced that with myself. Injuries that happened in junior high school came back in my mid-30s after they didn't hurt anymore, but it wasn't actually fully healed. Yeah, so that can happen. And sometimes you really don't know why. You just keep focusing and inviting circulation of breath and blood and chi into that area. Yeah? So no matter what the condition is, whether it's mental or physical or emotional or whatnot, we're treating everything with the same medicine, which is that proper circulation of blood, breath, chi is what heals the body, what allows the body to balance and each tissue to know what its function is, and to do that function properly is based on circulation. Yeah? So if it is something in the physical heart, it's circulation. If it's something more in the spiritual, emotional heart, it's circulation. So those emotions will move themselves, and there will be some opening. Yeah? That nothing gets stuck in an eddy in the river, that the river is flowing. Yeah? Okay, one more person. Anything to request for tonight's?
Irregular electrical impulse on the heart, slow heartbeat.
Okay, yeah, so that's a nervous, central nervous system, brain, heart. So the heart itself and every tissue in the body has its own sort of pulsing and motility. So I think about that as relationship. It is relationship. So relationship between electrical impulse nerve in the body and the heart organ, relationship between your body and your ancestor's body, relationship between your body and the cycles of nature. So it's all about relationships. So on a neuron, the synaptic cleft, on a joint, the joint capsule, on all the places in the body where there's two things relating, that's a rhythm issue. So you work on the relatedness aspect in the practice. So how you're mentally relating to the sensation, how your breathing is relating to the sensation, how your breathing is relating to emotion. So in that space where relating is happening, that's what heals any kind of electrical or rhythm type thing. It's very hard to sort of look at that mechanically because it's not mechanical, it's totally systemic. So that's how we look at it. It's all about relationship. So if you take that as like your lens and start looking at yourself that way and looking at your practice that way, you'll start to get some insight in how to relate in a way that allows things to, it's all about inside that gap is where it all goes down. Yeah. How you relate to food. In that gap between the carrot and your mouth and how you relate to that carrot determines what kind of nutrition you absorb from the carrot. So the heart has its own kind of relatedness with the whole rest of the body. And so that's your piece for how to look at it from a self-healing perspective. Okay? Yeah. All right. So every other problem falls into the category of it's about circulation. So then let's shake ourselves, let's move our joints, and then we're going to beat ourselves a little bit more tonight. So I'll say a little bit more about the beating. So we've been doing a few different kinds of beating. One is more like the heavy beating. We've done a little bit more of it on the hips. And so I would call that padding or bone tapping. And then there's the lighter beating that affects more the skin, makes you get red and stings. And we can call that slapping. Right? So tonight we're going to do a little bit more slapping. And so what happens with slapping is that it needs to sting. So if you kind of go like this on your wrist a few times, it needs to be like you don't really want to do that. If you're kind of like, oh, this is nice, you're not doing it right. It needs to be like, that's kind of annoying. That stings and doesn't feel fantastic. That's the right amount of pressure. Okay? And so we're going to do that on our joints. And so the joints are the confluences of there's a lot of acupoints there. There's, of course, that's where the fluid is and vessels and nerves and tendons and ligaments are all crossing in those spaces. So those are the important spaces to tap. What might happen is you'll get a little red, then you might start getting a little bit of bruising. Bruising might be like a little bit of kind of light red all the way to like purple and black. So, and that's good. So what's happening is what gets drawn out is the stagnation of blood and chi. and that will go back into circulation. That means that blood was not really in circulation. It's kind of caught in an eddy, and it will break up and it will go out. Yeah. So this is very, very healing. And just like a couple weeks ago, we talked about how important qi washing is to rub the whole body as a practice every single day. Tapping, the slapping and patting the whole body every single day is another complete practice. And it's very healing. When you find those places in your body where you're particularly painful, you spend more time tapping that place. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, a half hour. And in the beginning, if it's really painful, it's going to turn, it's going to bruise, it's going to turn red, purple, or maybe black. And then you keep working with that. It will be gone, the pain will be gone. Yeah? It's a really powerful method, and it's used in a lot of different traditions. It's kind of not popular because you actually have to go to the place of where it's painful. So after a couple of minutes, it will just feel warm, and it will actually feel really good, and then later you'll feel the effect of it. It's amazing.
Sometimes so, the pain that you have, it's not exactly where you feel it.
Yeah. That's right. So that's why we do all the joints. So no matter where it is, and especially like, let's say it's your kidneys, we're not going to whack your kidneys. So then we work with your knees and your hips and your elbows. Those all relate to that area. So indirectly, if you work with all the joints, especially if you just do the wrist, elbows, shoulders, ankles, knees, hips, you can get the whole body by hitting those joints. And then it's exactly right. If it's, say the pain is here, doesn't matter. If you get the knee and the hip, it's going to open up the channels between there. So what we're doing with the idea of circulation is if you can open up the flow between these two places by stimulating them, everything in between that gets opened up and the circulation improves, right? So we will tap the face and the head, but you're not gonna whack your brain. So you work with the areas of your body that relate to the brain with a little bit more pressure, and then you increase circulation to the brain. So that helps things like insomnia and improving your memory and pituitary pineal function. You don't wanna whack your pituitary gland too hard, yeah? And, you know, we all have some amount of vanity, so slapping yourself also improves the circulation to the skin, which causes the skin to fill out, which reduces the tendency of the skin to fall in on itself, right? So wrinkles get reduced, aging spots get reduced, the skin has more fullness and more flow of blood. So that's like a side effect. It wasn't created for that, it just happens. And if your body's holding water, that water will go into circulation, so people often find they lose weight. Right? Or if they're not holding enough weight, then the body will hold more weight. Right? It means hold more power, not fat, but you actually have more flesh. Okay, so let's stand up and start to shake.